You are listening to the ForceCom Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness. Hey everyone, welcome to the ForceCom Frontline. I'm Ashley and I'm your host. Today we are joined by the ForceCom Command Chaplain, Chaplain David Bolus. Since 1775, Army chaplains have acted as spiritual counselors who support, motivate, and provide emotional guidance to soldiers and their families. Chaplains provide marriage and family counseling, serve in medical facilities and combat hospitals, and help the Army build inner resilience as they deal with unique physical, mental, and spiritual challenges. And Chaplain, you're here to tell us more about all of that. So thank you for taking time out of your schedule to do this.
Thank you, Ashley.
Absolutely.
Appreciate the opportunity to be on frontline with you.
So before we really get into spiritual readiness, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, how did you get into the chaplaincy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. So I wasn't always a chaplain in my BC days, my before chaplain days. I was a tanker, an armor officer. So I grew up in a small town about 20 minutes outside of Toledo, Ohio. I grew up on a farm out there. My dad was a medic in World War II. And three of his four siblings also served in the war. So I kind of grew up knowing that legacy. Yeah. He never talked about it. Found out later that there were good reasons why he didn't. But I remember going up into the attic and, you know, playing with his World War II uniforms, his dress greens, which look a lot like our AGSUs now, which are them. And I ended up getting an appointment to West Point. I graduated there in 1993, and that time was really good for me because they had some strong chaplain programs that I took advantage of. So as I was commissioned, I was trying to integrate my call to the profession of arms with also with my faith, my Christian faith. Sometimes I think I did it okay. Other times I failed big time. But I learned a lot. But along the way, I had some chaplains who were very instrumental for me, battalion chaplains, brigade chaplains. So I was serving in Korea, and it was there I kind of had an epiphany of a calling to full-time ministry. And the chaplaincy is a call within a call. First you're called to full-time ministry, and then you're called to the chaplaincy. So I thought I heard that. My wife and I prayed about it for about another week, and some pretty divine things happened that that just confirmed that calling. So got out after 5.5 years of being an armor officer, went to seminary. Wow. I was going to serve as a pastor for a while. September 11th happened, and when I saw President Bush get on the TV saying we're sending troops into combat, I just really felt like, you know, Lord, you have given me these opportunities in the Army, not to be a local pastor, but to be a chaplain. With them.
Giving me the goosebumps.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was a pretty clear calling for us. So came back in early 2002, you know, right after we started deploying troops into combat into Afghanistan. And I cut my teeth as a chaplain in the 75th Ranger Regiment. So, you know, serving with leaders like Thomas, Carrilla, Votel, Clark, great NCOs like Greca, Bishop, Pouliot, Johnson. I mean, I really was honored to serve with these guys. And served at the 101st, served at 8th Army, USFK, just came from Special Operations Command.
Okay.
And it's an honor, real honor to be here at ForceCom.
So it sounds like the chaplaincy wasn't completely out of the realm of possibilities for you since you entered the Army, really. It's something that maybe was kind of always there.
Yeah, well, and it was interesting because I never had any priests or pastors or anybody full-time ministry in our family. So it was kind of a brand new thing.
Okay.
Which caused my family to kind of look at me like, Dave, are you okay? but I think they felt reassured when I explained my reasons.
Yeah. Awesome. Gosh, you gave me the goosebumps. But so moving on to chaplains in general. So as we know, physical and mental health of ForceCom soldiers and really all soldiers is key to their success when it comes to fighting and winning on the battlefield. But can you explain to us really what spiritual readiness is and how that spiritual readiness is equally as key to the success of the individual soldier as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So, you know, a vital aspect of warrior readiness is spiritual readiness. And I guess just a quick way to understand what spiritual readiness is, it's the strength of spirit that enables the warfighter to accomplish the mission with honor. That's just a good street definition of spiritual readiness.
And, you know, not to interrupt you, but I feel like spiritual readiness is one of those things where it can be difficult to understand. Physical readiness, totally get that, you know. But when you talk about spiritual readiness, it's not something that you can feel or really see. So I feel like that's where maybe there's a challenge in fully understanding it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember when I was at the 101st, we were sitting down talking about well, our Ready and Resilient team was sitting down, and we were talking about the line of effort, the spiritual line of effort. And we had some measures of performance and effectiveness up there. And, and the commanding general looked at me. He said, "Chaplain, those are kind of squishy mows and mops." And he said, "No offense, you're not squishy, but these are." And exactly that was his point. It's just, it's kind of hard to get after that. And it is hard when you're talking about issues of the soul, things like meaning, purpose, identity. They're a lot harder to measure than, you know, my ACFT score or how many behavioral health visits have I had. But and I know we'll talk about this, but just as vital, if not more vital, because it goes to the core of what a human really is. And we know that the core of the human drives thoughts and then behaviors, attitudes, which is what we're concerned about right now. Behavior of people taking their own lives and things like that.
And other harmful behaviors.
Absolutely. If I could add too, just this concept of spiritual readiness. So it's this is not a new thing, right? It's really part of the U.S. Army's legacy. And actually, so General Marshall, you know, the namesake of our building here at Forcecom, before we entered into World War II, General Marshall said this. He said, you know, and he was a war fighter. He had been around for a while, World War One, but he was talking about the things that made the difference in combat. And he said this, "I have said it is the spirit which endures to the end. The determining factor in war is something invisible and intangible, something wholly spiritual. The men, in our case, men and women, will fight, but if they have to fight with more than their bodies and their hands and their material weapons, they will fight with their souls." So he was talking exactly about that the inner person that is that makes a difference between victory and defeat, between continuing on or quitting.
Right. And so I finally remembered what I was going to say. You talk about purpose and finding purpose and what your purpose is. And I think that can be a tough thing to really to sit down and think about and then be like, well, shoot, what is my purpose? And how do I figure that out? How do I figure it out?
Well, that's something that spiritual readiness delivers. It delivers a strong sense of purpose and meaning and an identity that is actually rooted in something that can't be easily taken away from you. And that's, unfortunately, that's, I think, our current contemporary culture. As we receive soldiers and as the military receives service members, we're receiving generally people that don't have strong sense of meaning, purpose in life, and identity. And I think that plays into the suicide prevention or the suicide problem that we have. Because when you come in, you know, serving in the military is not easy. You know, some people, some youngsters, this is like the first time they've really been asked to do something hard in life. It's not impossible, and it gives you a great sense of joy and accomplishment when you do it. But without that sense of purpose, meaning, and identity, you know, it's easy just to say, you know what, I'm a failure, and I'll always be a failure, which is not true.
Right. Absolutely. And so since you started talking about suicide prevention, we were just in a meeting recently, and I heard the term human flourishing. So, and that was, I've not heard that before. So can you explain what that is and how it really ties into suicide prevention?
Well, human flourishing is something that's been researched for the last probably about 140, 150 years. And it's had different names. You know, it's been called the good life. You know, in religious realms, it's called the blessed life or being blessed. In the military, we call it resilience or resiliency. But researchers call it human flourishing. And looking, going back all those decades, they've kind of narrowed down what a flourishing life looks like, those domains or those dimensions. And there's six things, and I'll go through them real quickly. The first is life, happiness and satisfaction, meaning and purpose, virtue and character, close social relationships, mental and physical health, and then financial and material stability. Now, you probably noticed, Ashley, that most of those are kind of hard to measure.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the military, Department of Defense, listen, we need data. We want to know if the things we're throwing money at are actually working.
So true.
But I would say two-thirds of these dimensions are just inherently hard to measure.
Yeah.
Now, measurements do exist for these things, but I think it's a lot easier to throw money at financial and material stability. Hey, houses, good housing for our soldiers, are they getting paid, things like that. And also mental and physical health, you know, the number of gyms, as we talked about before, ACFT scores. But how do you measure meaning and purpose or virtue and character? And as a result of that, my observation is my 30 years in the military, we are getting further and further away of even talking about how those dimensions are, how to build those in a soldier and a family member's life. And we're focusing more on the things we can more easily collect data of.
Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. So how do you, you know, I'm looking at your paper, close social relationships. How is that something that you can really help somebody adapt, do, want?
Yeah, well,
and I don't know that that's a question that you can answer, but in looking at those dimensions, how do we do that?
Yeah, well, great question there. So researchers have not only looked at, okay, what are the domains of human flourishing, but what are the pathways that really deliver to build human flourishing domains? And they found four major pathways, and each one of these pathways touch on all six. Each one of these, you know, touches on all six of these domains. So the pathways are this: family is the first. Okay, a happy family that's supportive. You go home at the end of the day and you don't feel like you're fighting another battle with your first sergeant, platoon sergeant, or whatever. Education, they're finding that the more education you have, the more you'll tend to flourish in life and your perspective. Work and employment. Okay, one, just having a job, having a paycheck, but also feeling safe in the place where you work. So our sharp initiatives and are important. You know, I come to work and I feel safe there. But the fourth one is religious community. And, you know, communities of faith, they deliver in spades on meaning, purpose, close social relationships. It's all baked into the cake. Virtue and character.
Yeah.
Conversations we don't normally have, and you may not get from your, you know, unit commander, your NCO. Religious communities just habitually talk about those things. And in doing such, they build those into life.
And they're welcoming, too.
Yes.
But I think for somebody who, say you did not grow up going to church. Mm-hmm. You've gone away and you're in the military and you live in the barracks and you're a single soldier, you're all alone. Taking a step to go to church for the first time or to think, I want to go to church or I should go to church. I feel like that's not an easy step and one that people probably often don't think of. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's really a question, but I just feel like...
Yeah. Well, no, actually, you're exactly right. Majority of our soldiers in the barracks here at Fort Liberty and around the Army don't wake up on Sunday mornings thinking, hey, I need to find a chapel.
Yeah.
It would be a good thing for me to go to chapel or find a local church. They don't, and that's, that's evident because of our culture. Maybe they weren't raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing is this, is that, and you're aware of this, FM 7-22, our new resilience field manual has included for the first time spiritual readiness. So not only physical readiness, nutritional, mental, and sleep readiness, but also spiritual readiness. And so this is definitely a step in the right direction. Couple things there, just, and we talked about it earlier, is that, you know, spiritual readiness has always been part of the U.S. Army from the very beginning.
Yeah.
One of the first things that General Washington did, you know, after getting his officers in place, he says, hey, Congressional Congress, we need some chaplains.
Well, and I always go back to the story of the four chaplains. That was one of the first, I think, stories I ever heard about chaplains, honestly.
Absolutely inspiring.
Yeah.
And it continues to inspire us today.
Yeah.
But What happened was in the 1980s, and I think the intention was good, but in an attempt to be more inclusive of diversity and religious belief and cultures, religion was almost stripped from public dialogue.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, So talking, just having a vocabulary of talking about things of the heart and soul and how important it is to have a spiritual faith or beliefs, that was removed from the daily life of the soldier. And so basically what happened
like,
was...
But I feel like that's been removed from the life of not just soldiers, but like the general public.
Absolutely. And so the baby, right, got thrown out with the bathwater. But what the Army, U.S. Army chaplaincy has begun to do in the last, especially the last 7 to 8 years, is really talking about the science of religion and spirituality. And what researchers are finding about just having the thing called the strong spiritual core or a developed spiritual core. And a couple things they found is this, is that you know, everybody has a spiritual core. You know, we're all innately spiritual. And you can look at, you know, go back to human history as long as we've recorded it, and you can see how humans are reaching out for something beyond themselves to get hope, meaning, joy, purpose, all that. But what they're finding is this, is that if a person develops their spiritual core, it provides huge protective factors in life. So let me just go through a couple numbers. Provides protective factors to reduce risk regarding suicide. Up to 80%.
Wow.
Protective factors over major depressive disorder, 60%. High risk taking, 70%. And substance dependence and substance abuse, up to 80% again.
Wow.
And they said this, there is no protective factor identified by clinical sciences that in scope or scale compares to the protective benefits of religion and spirituality against suicide.
Wow.
And so in a way, you could say this, that it's actually harmful for a provider or for a commander or for a leader to just, you know, not provide that discussion or not provide that as a category to discuss with when a soldier is going through a difficult time.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, huge protective factors.
And, you know, you talk about, I feel like a lot of things you talk about with being open in having these conversations, those are things that are just hard to do in general. And it's very hard to, and I was talking to somebody else about this recently. It's very hard to ask somebody, how are you doing? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. Deeper than just on the surface, like not just a how you doing today, but are you okay? That's hard to do. But I feel like what you're talking about here in the spiritual readiness realm, that can help people build that confidence to have those sorts of conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our first answer tends to be, hey, how you doing? I'm fine.
Right.
And we really need to go past fine.
Yeah.
But doing that, you know, we're not going to open up to anybody.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what the CG talks about, empowering leaders that build trusting environments and cultures.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. Because if a soldier doesn't feel like the leader has their back, doesn't feel like there's trust, they're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
And our culture, unfortunately, delivers that to us. Like, hey, you know, isolate yourself. And it's just, we're at a place where people have a hard time reaching out.
Yeah.
Pride has always been a factor as long as mankind has walked the earth.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to get a little humility, lower our pride and say, you know what? Hey, I need to talk.
Yeah.
Happens to me, you know, me all the time. You know, chaplains, believe it or not, you know, contrary to popular opinion, we have bad days too.
Yeah.
And just you know, last week, a guy asked me, Chaplain, how are you doing? And I was grappling with some stuff that had to do with my kids. And, you know, I tell you what, after talking to him, I had just a sense of peace that I didn't have before the conversation.
I'll tell you, I was walking down the hall the other day and somebody said, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, fine. And in my head, I'm like, I am not fine.
Right.
You know, like it. Yeah. And I think that that is how a lot of people are. You don't know what somebody is going through. Yeah. I think a lot of us can put on a face when we need to. And we have to occasionally. But I just don't think we let people in. And it's very easy for us to just hide. And even when you go in and you take those questionnaires at the doctor's office, I am sure there are a lot of people who are lying on those as well. And it's just easier to...
Oh, that never happens. What are you talking about?
It's just easier, I feel like, sometimes we think to keep it in rather than to talk about these things and actually maybe get some help from somebody.
Absolutely. I agree.
So, you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, the church and spirituality and What do you say to somebody, though, who says, I'm not religious? I can't go talk to a chaplain. And I skipped around a little bit. But I think that's something that probably comes up a lot in people's mindset when they're considering their options. Well, I'm not religious, so that's not an option for me.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first, I mean, I think that's absolutely natural because nobody wants to have a conversation with somebody and you feel like you're going to be judged by a certain set of standards that you may or may not even hold or be lectured to or coerced. But the thing that soldiers and families need to know is, you know, chaplains receive special training to minister to a pluralistic culture, which we have.
Yeah.
And pluralism means that everybody is invited to and encouraged to fully engage in your faith or your perspectives on something and not boil it down to just this, you know, just kind of vanilla cardboard belief for everybody.
Yeah.
You're fully allowed to believe. So anyway, chaplains and religious affairs specialists too, not just chaplains, are trained to do that and really meet somebody where they are. And, you know, even though I might have a different faith conviction than you do, there are more things that I can do for you than I cannot do. But if, you know, a soldier does come up, let's say a Jewish soldier comes up to a Catholic priest and says, hey, will you officiate my bar mitzvah or my son's bar mitzvah? Okay, a Catholic priest can't do that.
Right.
But he'll find a Jewish rabbi.
The person who can.
Whether in uniform or out of uniform to do it.
Yeah.
And that's something that we absolutely do for our soldiers. And you know, we owe it to America to do that. You know, imagine if you send your sons and daughters into the U.S. Army. Isn't it good to know that their spiritual needs are going to be taken care of?
Yeah.
And they'll receive something according to their faith group that they were raised in, and they found strength and support in as they grew up, and they'll continue to do that.
Yeah. So I'm going to pull the string a little further. So I'm a naysayer. So not really, but so I go talk to the chaplain. He's going to tell me I need to go to church and he's going to try to convert me into X, Y, or Z religion. What do you say?
What do I say to that?
What do you say to that?
Well, so I'll just tell you a quick story. So in my first battalion, there was a young guy. I'll just change his name. His name is Gary. He was not doing very well. I didn't have any conversations with him, but he tried to take his own life. He went to his hometown, checked himself into a hotel, tried to take his life. Fortunately, a housekeeper came in, found him in the bathtub, and saved his life. Well, this soldier, as he came back, the chain of command said, well, you're going to get in trouble for what you did, but you also need to go and see the chaplain. You know, pulled me into it, which I was happy to do.
Yeah.
And this young soldier, he was Jewish. You know, he was raised Jewish, but he was not practicing that. And so as we began to talk, and I began to talk to him about things that would be helpful as he went forward, he began to ask me about, so chaplain, what do you believe in? You know, and anyway, what does faith mean? We started to have conversations of worldview, of faith. And you know what? He, at the end of the day, he grew in his faith. And he's a new person right now, married, has kids.
It's amazing.
And he really bounced back from that. But a major part of that was him getting serious about developing his spiritual core in his life.
It's amazing.
But unfortunately, it took that trial, that tribulation in his life. But, you know, that is true. A saying that has really meant a lot to me is this, is that, you know, tough times in life, they don't create our need for God, but tough times in life reveal our need for God. And sometimes we're not paying attention until, you know, the proverbial stuff is hitting the oscillating device, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to what you said before, too. You have to build trust with your subordinates, with your leaders, with everybody, because you don't want to be working on that when a crisis happens.
Right.
You want to have that foundation set already. Yeah. And I think spiritual readiness is the same exact way.
It is. And even more so, because those things we talk about, meaning, purpose, identity in life, those are passed on primarily through relationship. Relationship is the medium that those deeper things are passed along.
Yeah.
So it's not through, you know, a lecture, it's not through a PowerPoint presentation, but it's through relationship with somebody that you trust. And so as we keep that in mind, we can develop those inner things that spirituality does for us.
Okay. This is going really fast. We're going to run out of time, but I want to talk about, so two things I want to make sure we cover. Chaplains offer 100% confidential counseling. 100%.
100%. Yes.
So what can I come and talk to you about?
Well, it's easy answer. And one word, anything.
Okay.
Anything. So chaplains and religious affairs specialists have confidentiality. And so when a soldier or family member comes to a chaplain or religious affairs specialist, because of their position as a religious leader, as soon as that conversation starts, it is completely confidential. Chaplain Corps members, chaplains, religious affairs specialists, are not mandated reporters.
Okay.
Which means if something comes up that hints at child abuse or elder abuse or domestic violence, chaplain is not mandated to report that.
See, I think that is important.
Absolutely.
I'm not promoting any sort of violence whatsoever, but I think people can think 100% doesn't mean 100%. There are these caveats.
Yeah.
But you're saying that there are not.
No caveats. No caveats. So unless the person who is coming and making or is receiving counseling, unless the person releases the chaplain or religious affairs specialist to divulge that information that happened in that confidential conversation, the chaplain can't say anything. And now there's military rules of evidence and all that.
Sure.
But still, the chaplain is covered to protect that confidential communication. So I think this is very important for military leaders at the squad, platoon, company level and up, that if you have a soldier that you're not quite sure what's going on, or soldiers that's having some difficulties, an insider to the formation is the unit ministry team. They're right there. They're out there doing PT every morning. They're building that trust. Have them go to the unit ministry team, sit down, talk with the chaplain, and the chaplain can confidentially kind of diagnose, like, hey, you know, we can handle this in-house, or hey, we definitely need to refer the soldier to an expert, whether at ACS or behavioral health. But often what we do is knee-jerk reaction, send the soldier directly to behavioral health when it didn't rise to that level.
Yeah.
The person just needed to talk.
I was just going to say that. I think sometimes people just need to talk. Have somebody listen to you.
Yeah.
Like, I know this is probably going to sound super cheesy, but I was going through something and I was like, you know what? I don't necessarily want to talk to somebody, but I'm going to journal. And so even just putting whatever you're feeling out in the atmosphere in some form or fashion is good.
It's very good. And, you know, Ashley, a clear conscience makes a soft pillow. And so just sitting down and talking with somebody is it's just a good habit in life.
Yeah.
Especially if you're carrying a lot of rocks in your rucksack and you realize I don't need to be carrying these.
Right.
In our chaplains too, they all have master's degrees.
Okay.
We have family life chaplains, which are trained, certified counselors. Most of our installations have family life centers, which can offer more long-term counseling from a chaplain. Nice thing about being counseled by a chaplain or going to a chaplain for counseling is you can engage in the spiritual conversations, which other counselors may not feel comfortable doing because of their experience, or they may feel like, hey, I can't go down that road.
Yeah.
But a chaplain can engage all of life and not segregate some and say, well, we can't talk about that aspect.
Yeah. Well, I have said it before on this podcast, but talking to somebody and having somebody just validate some of your feelings has an immense impact on you. And so I encourage NFLIX chaplains, wherever you need to go to just talk with somebody, I think is super important.
Absolutely.
But we're running out of time and I'm not even going to get to anything. But what I want to end with is, so while you're here at ForceCom, what's your goal? What do you hope to achieve?
Yeah, so I am really excited to advocate for our leaders, our ForceCom leaders, that they will fully embrace spiritual readiness and understand that this is a vital tool that they can put on the table with all of the other readiness tools to help their formations. And, you know, we talked about just the power that is just inherent in spiritual readiness and having a developed spiritual core. Yeah. Those protective factors are massive.
Yeah.
So I hope that leaders would, one, fully utilize their chaplains and religious affairs specialists, their chaplain sections, lean on them as advisors, invite them for their input, not marginalize them. And, you know, and also, too, just understand everything rises and falls on leadership. So it's the chaplains are partnering with commanders to bring greater readiness to the force. And if a leader just, you know, looks at their unit ministry teams, and says, hey, guys, you know, do that religious stuff that you do, but the commander doesn't model that in their own lives, then it's we're never going to fully realize the benefits of spiritual readiness.
Sure.
I think the last thing is this, is that, you know, the American public needs to know that their sons and daughters will grow spiritually, and we have the spiritual resources and capabilities to take care of them.
Absolutely.
That they will leave different in a positive way,
yeah.
More resilient, more confident in themselves, because they've been given the opportunity to grow in their faith.
Absolutely.
The U.S. Army, I think now we're waking up to it. We recognize that a strong spiritual core is vital, especially for the possible future challenges that we face,
yeah.
Needing resilient warriors who yeah. are spiritually strong as well.
Absolutely. And so we're out of time. Dean's going to yell at me soon. But is there anything that we didn't touch on that you just briefly want to make sure we mention?
You know, I'm happy about what we talked
okay.
about. Yeah, I absolutely am.
All right.
Hug a chaplain, hug a religious affairs specialist next time. You'll thank them. You know, and honestly, and I appreciate this. A lot of leaders will say, chaplain, how are you doing? You are carrying everybody else's baggage. How are you doing? And you know, that really means a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when you stick around to hear the answer to the question you just asked.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so no, we absolutely appreciate the support, and it's just an honor to continue to bring spiritual readiness to the U.S. Army like we have for the last 248 years.
Absolutely. Well, Chaplain, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come and talk with us. This was great. It went by a lot faster than I thought it would, so I appreciate you doing this.
Well, thanks, Ashley. God bless you, and thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. That's it for this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can also find full video episodes of our podcast on YouTube. You can just search for the Force Comm Frontline. And we'll see you next time on the front line.